So when was it you were released from internment then?
What internment must have been 1941.
And by then you were aged, what?
16 and a half.
So you went back to Mrs. Harwich?
I went back to Mrs. Harwich, and then we decided what I should do. I was offered I could have gone to study, I could have gone into the upholstery business, but I decided to go back into catering, and I found a job in John Smith & Company, the Grosvenor and the Corn Exchange, a big Glasgow catering company. And I worked in the Corn Exchange restaurant under Chef Hausdorfer and in the Rogano and in various places. Eventually, I went to the Beresford Hotel. And while I was in the Beresford Hotel, I started off as a chef de partie, and I became sous chef. And eventually, in the Grand Hotel, I became chef de partie. I was in charge of the Grand Hotel in Sookie Hall Street, which is that 1930s building. You know, it's now a student residence. Opposite Elm Bank Street.
Yes,
that,
yes, that's right.
That was the Beresford, not Grand. Beresford Hotel. Then I went on from the Beresford Hotel to the Grand Hotel, which was at Charing Cross. It's now a motorway hole. That was the big Grand Hotel, belonged to the cooperative. I became chef de partie there. I became head chef there, chef de cuisine. And I was there, my whole career was there, and eventually I left there and went to France.
When was that?
In 1953, I went to France and worked for a few months in France, by which time I was married. And then I came back here, and then I went back to the Grand Hotel, but after that I went out of the Grand Hotel. I did other things. So that was quite an interesting period. I catering in these days, when I started, was wartime. Rationing was fairly strict. You could buy so much fish, and when it was finished, there was a limited supply. Nevertheless, there was only a price restriction in Great Britain. There was only a price restriction. You could not charge more than 5 shillings for a meal. You didn't need coupons like in other countries. Your ration book did not. You could go to a restaurant. This country was quite different from other countries. You could go to a restaurant during the war here if you had the money and if there was enough food. You didn't. It had nothing to do with your rationing. There's another story. It's fate. You wanted to do something. I wanted to join the Merchant Navy. I wanted, in the Isle of Man, in the internment camp, we were given, if you wanted early release, you were given the chance to join the Pioneer Corps. Well, the Pioneer Corps was the lowest of the low. We wanted to fight Hitler, but something better than the Pioneer Corps. So I didn't join the Pioneer Corps. I was released. When I came to Glasgow, I went to the Labour Exchange, in these days known as the Beru in Waterloo Street, yes?
Still
the Beru. I want to join the Navy. I didn't get. I wrote letters to my MP, didn't get. I wanted to go to Hillington, to make munitions, whatever. In the Labour Exchange in Waterloo Street sits this young boy. I don't think he was a year older than I was. And he looked at me and he said, Specky, he called me Specky. Specky, he said, you're going nowhere. We also need people to cook for the public. Now, this 17-year-old clerk in a Labour Exchange, any application I made, he tore it up and threw it in the bin. Incredible. So I spent the war here in Glasgow in cooking for the public, so to speak. And in the Grand Hotel, eventually I was responsible for starting kosher catering.
At the Grand Hotel?
Yeah, the Grand Hotel.
And then you started up your own?
I went into business with somebody else, with pet foods and bird cages that didn't work out. And then I started out my own catering business.
When was that?
That must have been, 1960, yes, 62, something like that, yeah? So that was quite successful.
I'm sure you catered for my
permission. Yes, I did. Oh, yes, definitely.
That was 1961.
Well, there you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were one of the first. Your mother, I remember, your mother lived in the West End.
Garden Street.
Steep Street. I remember that very.
1961.
Yes. That's right. There you are.
So yes, catering. Yeah.
That was at the beginning. Yes.
Yes, that's good. And how long were you a kosher caterer in Glasgow?
Till 1990.
Yeah.
And 1990, that's right.
What can you say about your experiences as a kosher caterer?
Experiences of kosher caterer are very, very interesting. You know, people say, how can you do that? Very simple. Of course, you have to earn a living, you can do that. It was interesting in the respect, you got to know a lot of people, and you got to know people. You know, you're doing a function for them. You had to go and discuss the menu. It spread by word of mouth. It boomed very, very quickly, because obviously what we did was the right thing at the time. It boomed very quickly, and I didn't have to do any advertising. Within 2 years, it grew out of all proportion. Because we tried to get away from chopped liver and chicken soup. We tried to broaden things out. You know, obviously, I had different background, because people, let's face it, in these days here, they were extremely blinkered, absolutely blinkered. I mean, anything out with that can, you didn't, it might not be kosher. I mean, I remember the supervisor, you can't give mayonnaise. I said, what do you mean I can't give mayonnaise? But it's white in color. I said, there's nothing to it. It's not made with cream or milk. You follow. They had no knowledge that mayonnaise is made from eggs. People had no knowledge. They were rather very, very inhibited. So we broadened that out. We also, but interesting experiences, obviously. Most things with most people, I had very good relations. We went very well. People paid their bills. One or two didn't pay their bills at the very beginning. Somebody didn't pay their bill. So I took them to court. I was told, you don't do that. I said, watch me. And it established. After that, I had no trouble. No trouble whatsoever. People are people. Look,
You say you were bringing a new, more continental style.
Yes.
To Glasgow.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. For example, this is how somebody said to me, "Look, can you not do something about prawn cocktail? So we use salmon." You follow people, other people. Then people came back from abroad. Could we have crudités on the table? Okay. Mm-hmm. Half the Henry. What is this? Have you no time to cook the vegetables? Look, it grew. Obviously, it grew, and people grew with it. People began to learn. But at the beginning, it was very, very restrictive.
So you were educated.
Well, in a way, yes. In a way, well, we brought in different things, yes. And that's how it is.
How did you meet your wife, Ingrid?
How did I meet my wife, Ingrid? When we came to Glasgow, Ingrid came to Glasgow later. When we arrived in Glasgow, I was with a Jewish family. Most people were Jewish families, but some weren't. But when you are young and you're a refugee and you have a problem with language, etc., first of all, you try and get together. So there was the refugee center, the house on the hill in Sokolovsky, which was a most important place. We were very active there, yes? There were discussions, there were theater groups. Most people, of course, we were the young ones. We had a choir. And we were very politically active, of course. That was very much so. Very left-wing, as it was in these days. We marched on the 1st of May. We fought. We performed all over Scotland, in the Usher Hall in Edinburgh and Aberdeen, for Mrs. Churchill's Aid to Russia Fund, to raise money for a second fund or whatever. It was also very, very left-wing, very big communist influence as well. There was no question about it. I mean, I wrote pamphlets with Heine Price, and it was an amazing, amazing group of people, fairly intelligent, some of them very clever, very high-powered, very politically active. My Ingrid's father wasn't keen. He said, you shouldn't get involved in that. Well, yes, you see, now when you get older, you look back on this, of course you get involved in that. But there is such a thing as MI5, let's face it. You might be sent back if you misbehave. But we were very politically active. And this is where I met Ingrid. Mm. It was on a Sunday we went in rambles. I mean, remember, none of us had money. Most of us had no jobs. We were still studying or whatever. On a Sunday, we went out on walks with a number 4 tram to Clarkson and Crofoot and up in the hills. But we all, you brought a sandwich or something. But as we were very egalitarian, you weren't allowed to eat your own sandwich, because you had money, the others didn't, so they were thrown in the middle, and you took lucky dip. This is how things were, yeah? This is where I met Ingrid.
Yes.
And we met lots of people whom we were very friendly with, and stayed friendly. How did we integrate into the larger community? Well, that also came later. I mean, we joined the music society, and people ask us, when you come like that, you can be accused of being clannish. You stick to yourself. Well, all right, you do. As a group of refugees, of foreigners in the country, of course you stick to yourselves. He said, if you don't want us to stick together, you have to invite us. We can't knock on your door, let me in. You have to do it. It has to come from the other side. It takes a long time, but it did come, and we became very integrated, obviously. But, you know, people said, you're clannish, you all stick together. And I always say to them, I said, look, Scots emigrate to Canada. What's the first thing they do? They join the Caledonian Society. I mean, that's how it is, yes? And then, of course, they come back home on holiday. We had no, this home for us did not exist. Now, while I was in that refugee center, there was all something called Free German Youth. It sounds terrible, but Freie Deutsche Jugend, that there was this left-wing push, people going back to Germany to rebuild after the war. Well, we never, 90% of us did not have this intention. 10% did. Well, obviously, some people went back to help reestablish a new country. When I was in Berlin at the Jewish Museum the other day, last year, he produced a booklet written by a chap who came to interview me once years ago. And when I see my name there, Heinz Wuger, I was the Gauleiter, so to speak, for Scotland. I mean, it you know, if MI5 gets hold of this kind of thing, you get expelled. So it was quite tremendous what went on. But none of us, I mean, from all the people we knew here, I think only 4 or 5 went back to Germany, to Austria or Czechoslovakia to rebuild a democratic system. Fine. But we had no intention of doing that. It took me 1945. It took me till 1947 to bring my mother to Glasgow. The amount of affidavits you needed, and you had to sign that she would not fall on the public purse, etc. But eventually she did come here, saved her life, she came here. She hated Glasgow, even though I was an only child. She absolutely hated Glasgow. What she didn't like either, that I was married. You see, one son, this little boy, and all of a sudden he's a married man. Now, she liked Ingrid as a person, not as a wife. So much so, well, too. But she's a mother. I mean, she's a wonderful woman, my mother. But nevertheless, I tell this quite openly. She never said a bad thing about Ingrid. On the other hand, she respected Ingrid, but not as a wife. So after 2 years, my mother left Glasgow to live with her sister in Brooklyn. Would you believe that, yeah? Absolutely, so much so. And she was a very tough lady. In Brooklyn, she started working in restaurants and hotels. She made a life for herself. She lived there for over 25 years. She even got a social security number and a pension. She became an American citizen, a very proud American citizen. She said, in the United States, nobody asks me, where do you come from? They ask you, what can you do? Which she has a point. You see, here, a woman in her 50s, 60s, trying to get a job in Glasgow was fairly impossible. She worked for another refugee people here making stuffed animals, but she hated it. And she went to America. And every year, with our children, we went to America 1 year, and she came here the next year, so we had constant contact. And eventually, when her sister passed away, she came to stay with us in Pollock Shields, and she passed away here in Glasgow, aged 89. So tough, but she did it, yeah.
What would you say was the attitude of Scottish people to Jewish people when you were...
The general Scottish public, I don't think I ever, apart from the odd anti-Semitic remark, I never had any problems. I think only once in the street was I accosted, and possibly not because I was Jewish, possibly because I was foreign. But I must say, people on the whole, I mean, Glasgow is a tough city, I know that, and a criminal city, etc. But really, I had no problem. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
What about your involvement in the Jewish community in Glasgow?
Well, the people I stayed with were Jewish family. They took me to they took me to Queen's Park Synagogue. Mm-hmm. I became a member of Queen's Park Synagogue with their family. And when we moved then, when I got married, we moved to Pollock Shields. We then went to Pollock Shields Synagogue, which doesn't exist any longer. We got married in Pollock Shields Synagogue. And we had lots of friends, Jewish friends, obviously, in the music society, the literary society. And Ingrid was a dressmaker in these days, got to know other people. And eventually, when Pollock Shields Synagogue dissolved, I went back to Queen's Park. And when Queen's Park Synagogue dissolved, I finally went to the Reform Synagogue, which I feel very happy with. I could never have done that while I was a kosher caterer. You can imagine there were pressures. There were pressures. But that I feel quite at home there, but I felt quite at home in Queen's Park.
Why did you decide to move to the Reform?
Why did I decide to move to Reform? My background, my German-Jewish background, is much more liberal, not as orthodox, as the general community was here. Yes, so that really was not a step away. This would eventually happen. I could not do that. Well, I wouldn't. The Beth Din wouldn't have given me a license, a kosher caterer, because I don't want to go into the religious problems, but there are lots of, as you can imagine, we had lots of problems with the Beth Din. When I applied for a license, I started catering. I started kosher catering, no problem. Then, all of a sudden, but we have a bar mitzvah. Well, if we would like you to do the bar mitzvah, but if you do the bar mitzvah, the rabbi won't come. Well, all right. This is how it was. That's how it is. So I said to myself, I better get a license, otherwise I'll not go anywhere. Rabbi Gottlieb, I don't know if you remember Rabbi Gottlieb. Yes, remember Rabbi Gottlieb.
Very strict.
Well, he was very strict, but he was very strict, but nevertheless, he said to me, well, you want to apply for a license? He said, I'm not sure. Should you really do that? We have enough kosher caterers here. I said, but I would like to apply for a license. Well, I said, look, I'm not asking you for business advice. I'm asking you, I would like a license. And eventually he said to me, well, we don't expect you to lie flat on the ground in Tisha B'Av in the synagogue, but you have to conform to certain things. So I got a license, and then Rabbi Gottlieb passed away, then different kind of Beth Din. There were always problems. There were always problems with the Beth Din. Some people were extremely strict. For example, give you an idea. Obviously, dishes, meat, milk, we know all that. Then we had a supervisor, Reverend Ballin, who became an extremely good friend of mine. I miss him very much. He was a very nice man. But he was very strict.
He might have cleared him myself. Yeah.
Did he? He was very strict. His boundaries had supervisors. But he had a little sense of humor and a little outgoing. So when things happened, he would put them right. On the other hand, you get new dishes. All of a sudden, some frumer from the Colero, new dishes have to go to the mikveh. Have your dishes ever been to the mikveh? I said, no, they haven't. You better take your dishes to the mikveh. I mean, we're talking about thousands of pieces. So you know what I did? I said, here are the keys. You can come to my house and take them. I never heard any more. Well, I mean, you had to, I mean, all right, I can understand it, but they get carried away. They get absolutely carried away. Huh? So, but we established a good relationship, yes? Mm-hmm. And may I say, you remember Rabbi Rosen?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I met him the other day. I met him two years ago. Yes. We were going up north. And where do I meet him? In Glenfinnan. I said, what are you doing here? He was here to examine the salmon, He said to me when I left catering, he said to me, you're going out with a good name, which was a very nice thing to say. Yes, that I appreciated. Yes, that I appreciated. We have bad things. We had certain debts. Somebody wouldn't pay his bill, a very big bill. So what can you eventually have to take him to court? Nothing happened. He was fine, but it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. 2 years later, the same man phones me up. He said, I've got another daughter getting married. Would you do it? I said, I will do it if you pay beforehand. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the man was a gambler. Mm-hmm. When he had it, he was a big boy. Mm-hmm. When he lost, he didn't communicate. You know, this is human nature. Mm-hmm. This is human nature. And another man, I mean, I had hardly any debts. Another man, he also had business trouble. He went away. He owed me a few hundred pounds. Not a big deal. 2 years later, he comes to a function here. He said, Henry, I owe you something. He brings out an envelope. You know, these are tales. It's quite funny. This is,
I won't ask for names.
No, I won't give you names. But this is, this is. I mean, this is such is life.
Yes, such is life.